Hi there, Gemma here. If you're enjoying our podcast, then please do come along and put your name down on the wait list for our Schema Circle. And that way you'll hear when we next open the doors for new members to join. The Schema Circle is really our passion project, and it's our online schema coaching membership program. There's nothing really quite like it. It's new and innovative, and we just love it. Now, there's a huge library of content waiting for you already inside. We also continue to do 3 live Q&A coaching calls every month. Now, everything is recorded, of course, and ready for you to view at your own pace. If you're looking for, a unique way to understand yourself better and to make real change, then I do invite you to come and have a look. Go to theredflagproject.com.au/SC. Now, the Schema Circle isn't therapy, but it's a great accompaniment to your own therapy journey. It's also a great resource for therapists and coaches and for anybody, men and women, wanting to know more about schemas and how we can use this fantastic model to empower ourselves to make actual changes, the changes we want in our life. Now, it's currently housed on our Red Flag website, and just click the link below to read all about it. I hope to see you inside one day. Thanks for joining us at the Good Mood Clinic podcast, where we get to the heart of the matter about what makes us humans tick. We're Justine Corrie and Gemma Gladstone, 2 clinical psychologists and schema therapists, and we're passionate about helping you break unwanted life patterns and finding new ways to understand yourself and those tricky people around you. Life is way too short to be derailed by our schemas, by self-sabotage, toxic relationships, or a lack of self-worth. So let's tackle this together and help you reclaim your life and who you really are. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Good Mood Clinic podcast. My name's Gemma Gladstone and I'm here with my colleague, Justine Corrie. Hi, Justine.
Hi, Jim. How are you going?
Good. Good, thank you. I'm ready to go for this second part of the Tindler Swindler. So last time we were talking about the Netflix production, Tindler Swindler, we talked about him, the guy called Simon, not his real name, but a huge scammer and con artist who would get women into relationships and scam a whole heap of money from them and just leave them really devastated.
Yeah, it was really intense.
Yeah, it was terrible and really destroyed. So he's one of many people who do this kind of thing, but he did it on a next level phase. He was huge. So, we talked about him last time and his schemas and modes, and today we're going to focus a little bit more about the women and also talk about some things in general. So we're going to talk about the women and why people have really tended to blame them a lot, because they copped a lot of flack. They copped a lot of vitriol on social media. So we're going to mention that, and then we'll talk a little bit about other types of love scams that we've heard about recently. There's just been a lot in the media lately, and a bit about catfishing as well. All these things are very much related. So you remember the Netflix movie?
Yeah.
Tindler Swindler? Yeah. And so you remember those two women?
Yes.
At the beginning. Yeah, I think the first one's name was Pernilla, and then she was sort of the slow grooming friend one. And then the other one was Cecilia, who was seriously love bombed. The first girl there whose life was seriously turned upside down. So afterwards, when that came out, they weren't just sort of victim blamed on social media. They were called all sorts of really horrible, nasty names. They were really attacked. And this was done both by men and women, certainly not just men, but women were vicious things, just saying like, oh, that would never happen to me. That's low level stuff. But there was also a lot of name calling, assuming that, oh, these women must be so like completely stupid, completely foolish, completely gullible, just complete idiots and all of that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it was really quite, I read a couple of them and they were really cruel.
Horrible.
Yeah, it was horrible. And I wonder too whether there's a gender bias in that, you know, whether you think women are sort of blamed a little bit more because of people always assume they must have done something to provoke the situation or to provoke the mistreatment.
So it's something something wrong with them rather than the perpetrator.
And that's the thing with victim blaming, isn't it? It's very internalizing of the victim, you know, in terms of like, oh well, if it's looking at the victim blaming is looking at the characteristics of the victim and assuming that that's why they were a victim of the crime. You know, things like, well, if that woman wasn't wearing that short skirt, she wouldn't have been sexually assaulted, that kind of thing.
That so type of thing.
Yeah, it's wrongly ascribing characteristics of the victim to justify their crime against them. And I suppose this has been going on in society for a long, long time. I just thought that it would be interesting to mention that I had a little bit of a look at this. I remember at uni, going back there was this really interesting social psychology. The social psychology has done a lot in this in terms of looking at victim blaming and why people are prone to blame the victim of a crime, no matter what it is.
Okay.
It makes us sort of, you know, feel better. And one of the main...
It's protective, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's protective. It's like, you know... And the one of the main ones is this just world hypothesis. Do you remember learning about that?
No.
Like a cognitive bias in social psychology, also called the just world fallacy.
Right. No, actually, no.
It's sort of, in other words, it's this idea that, you know, the world is just and the people who, something happens to someone, well, you kind of either get what you deserve or it was coming to you anyway or it happened because you did something.
Right.
Wrong or deviant, and therefore it wouldn't happen to me because I wouldn't do that, would never be a victim of a love scam because I'm too smart for that. I wouldn't get hooked in to that, and it's only stupid people who are victims of this sort of stuff. So it's sort of, it's a protective, you know, mechanism where you keep yourself a little bit separate. So the idea that, well, and I suppose the just world, it keeps that fallacy in your mind that the world is okay and that being a victim is avoidable. But of course, we know that often being a victim isn't avoidable. I mean, anybody can be targeted, anybody can be victimized, anybody can be a victim of any kind of crime, really.
So that's a way of reducing the probability of risk, you know, like a risk reduction strategy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And give you a sense of control over it because, you know, all human beings, we like to feel like we're in control of things. Yes. So
it would never happen.
Yes.
Okay. To me, yeah, because I'll never do X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
And, you know, I must have kind of caused it. So I suppose when women blame the women or men, they can feel, safer because we can sort of, we can have this kind of fallacy that, okay, I would never put myself in a situation or they must have done something to cause it. So that's pretty much some of that theory in social psychology.
But that's just across all humans. You know, it's just a general tendency that we all have and it's how we move through the world and a way of managing anxiety, I suppose.
In general as well, there was this other social psychology research that does suggest that, you know, generally they've done lots and lots of studies on this. Apparently it's a bit of an interesting topic, that people, we do tend, as humans, we do tend to default to the mode of trusting others. People tend to go along with a person's self-representation. So if I'm presenting myself to you and putting a lot of effort in to present myself to you in a certain way, there is a bias to believe that. As humans, we're social creatures, you know. I suppose also people or nice people want to avoid calling someone out, you know. We want to kind of believe people. There's that kind of trend.
So just to reduce any friction, we all want it to be smooth. We just take people at face value and what's in front of us. Okay. That makes sense. Because when you're even with clients, you know, when you're helping people deal with difficult people, you're actually a lot of the time helping them peer beyond what's in front of them, you know, respond to that front-facing persona or mode differently.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, there's a human sort of impulse at some level to take what is sort of in front of us. And there was this other these other studies that said that, you know, in social experiments, people will often hand over money even in the hope of obtaining something in return. And even when people are internally cynical, they'll still hand over the money. So even when we kind of have doubts, if they think, you know, so I suppose that's interesting, isn't it? Because this, the girl, the Penilla, the first one in the doco, was very infatuated with him and very attached because he'd done some serious love bombing. And so she's thinking, yeah, well, this will be an ongoing long-term relationship. Plus he also lied and it looked like he was a safe bet as well, that she would get his money back, her money back. So she was helping him out in a bad situation. She didn't doubt really early on that he wasn't who he said he was.
When did she start to feel uncomfortable? When did that happen? Can't remember now. How far was that, when she had already handed over some money? Like initially she was fine with it and then she started to feel uncomfortable, obviously because her debt was going up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there was just more and more of delay on that and excuses, and the more excuses that just didn't add up. So I suppose in general we all have this, or a lot of us have this thing called the truth default that's been identified. It's called the truth default, where we tend to assume that people are trustworthy, and society operates a lot on this idea of trust, right? The many factors in our society we trust, like Airbnb and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. It's a lot in our society is built mutuality and trust. We assume people are going to do what they say. We assume people are who they are.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. That's so true. And I'm just thinking, and then we're also that whole social proof thing as well, you know. So I suppose if you then throw all that in the mix, so he created this intense sort of profile that looked very valid, you know, that also would lead to more implicit trust, wouldn't it? And that's how social media actually works.
Yeah, so true. Social media. Yeah, and you wonder, it's okay for us because we've got before and after social media, but the young kids that are coming through now are growing up with that fallacy, and so they don't have space from it. So it's so important, isn't it, to educate and describe. It's like, because we have the prior knowledge, whereas they don't. It's sort of embedded in their world.
Yeah.
You see the young people sort of believing everything that they see. So some of these younger women who are embroiled in some of these scams, it's really scary. So that's all the, I suppose, why we're prone to be at the mercy of the con artist just in general. But then there's also other predisposing schema stuff that would put us at greater risk. Yeah. So I suppose the point that we want to make sometimes is that whether the scams, whether they're love scams, whether you're actually meeting the person in the flesh, or whether they're catfishing, which we'll talk about later, anybody can be targeted, right? Anybody can be approached, and anybody can be swept away in the beginning, but not everybody hangs in there, right? Not everybody hangs in there. So the hanging in there in the face of the evidence is going to be very much influenced by our own personal psychology and our own history and our own schemas.
So there's a general risk out there as a human, and then there's our individual factors that would bump the risk up to kind of persisting.
Our individual factors, and I suppose our social community and our social support factors, whether we have girlfriends around us that says, hey, that's dodgy, whether we have a good relationship with parents or other family members who are looking out for us. Not everyone has that.
Or would even talk to someone, I suppose, even if they did have people around them, depending on how comfortable you are talking about your thoughts and feelings, which is another potential schema-driven tendency, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Quite private.
Yeah. So in terms of that, because also before we even get to the, you know, the individual schema risk, there's these other things, I suppose, like we mentioned last time with the fantasy. Particularly in like the Simon character, the Tindler swindler, he played to the fantasy of the happily ever after, the big love at the beginning, the big love bombing, the big promises, and all of that sort of stuff. So I really played into that romantic fantasy. So I think that first woman there, Penilla, she was particularly vulnerable to that early on, because she, I think, described herself as someone who was very much a romantic and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, right? I think she mentioned Beauty and the Beast, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Wanted to find love, wanted to find her prince, which, you know, we all get. Well, I mean, you and I grew up in the era of Disney princesses. There wasn't sort of, this is prior to the more modern female leads portrayed. You know, they're very much more just waiting for the guy and
exactly
wanting the romance and swept away. Swept away
and the one, that one true love yeah. and trust your feelings.
That's
and,
right, trust your
feelings. You know, love will come and it just, there'll be, there's your soulmates and that one special person and all. That's a lot riding on it. It's a lot of pressure. Hello, lovely listeners. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. It's Gemma Gladstone here, and I want to let you know a little bit more about the Red Flag Project. It's an online course for women which provides you with a dating strategy designed to help you understand why you've ended up in relationships with men who have been emotionally unavailable or narcissistic. In the course, we'll help you begin to break this pattern and to really understand what's going on underneath it all. We'll teach you about all the actual red flags to watch out for and give you lots of practical advice and strategies. It will be life-changing if you let it. Just click on The Red Flag Project in the show notes below for this episode to get all the info. Now let's get back to the show. So what about then at the deeper personality level of people who hang in there? Unmet needs?
Unmet needs, totally. I suppose, well, if you're love bombed, as we've mentioned before in other episodes, you're getting all of that attention, validation and promise that you've probably been waiting for all your life that you didn't get when you were younger.
Yeah.
You're special, you're worthy, I want you with me always. I'll do whatever it takes to get you. I'll make these big grand gestures because that's how important you are to me. Yeah. Those are all the things we want from our parents. And then if you don't get those needs met, obviously you come into your adult romantic relationships really wanting that still, seeking that out, that sort of abandoned, deprived, vulnerable part of you. It would just be like water in a desert if you came across that. It would just feel so good. Finally get it. So, yeah, like very, very vulnerable to this type of thing. And then also once you're in it, and if they are meeting those needs, you're a lot, you know, even if your friends or family are raising suspicions, it feels so good. You're not likely necessarily to change your mind.
The love bomber, you get that all up in front for a while. And then what happens is the attention tends to then become a little bit more intermittent. Sometimes you get the good stuff, you know, sometimes you get all the good stuff, and then sometimes you get the not so good stuff, which is the absence and the periods of absences and not being able to get in touch or the changing of plans or the unreliability. And of course, we know that if we've got a strong abandonment schema in particular, then that is going to hook straight in with our early love template. And our vulnerable part says, yep, oh yeah, because sometimes I get a little bit and then I don't get a little bit. And so that inconsistency, the insecurity matches perfectly, whereas someone who wouldn't have that, say someone with a mainly predominantly secure attachment doesn't have an abandonment schema or a strong one, would be really off-put by that. They'd say, no, actually, you're too unreliable, bugger off.
That's right.
I don't want anything to do with you. I think I'll call it now and like end it. Whereas if you've got that vulnerability, you get hooked in and you stay hoping for this person to deliver. And they don't, of course, because early markers, you know, indicate a negative outcome. So there's that, but there's also these other schemas, the secondary schemas that develop, like the self-sacrifice, you know, the quintessential kind of nice person.
So,
you know, the other person's needs are more important than mine. So you've got an abandonment schema, you've also got the self-sacrifice or maybe the subjugation schema, and you're pretty other-directed. You're going to be thinking, oh, okay, well, the other person, particularly self-sacrifice, you know, if you're driven by guilt, maybe you'll be thinking, oh, well, I can't get rid of them now because, you know, they've been so nice that they need me, or I've got to trust that they actually need this money for an emergency or whatever it is. So that nice people, in inverted commas, do get hang around in Scandinavia. Mm.
So you find it hard to say no.
Because
if you say no, you might be abandoned. So even if you've got a niggle, your fear of being left and not having the good stuff would be too intolerable. So you'd keep saying yes to try and get the good stuff again. And it's when they, I think also that whole when you have the distance or when they're not available like they were before, so the tap gets turned off, you get highly anxious as well. It feels really bad, like it can be preoccupying, really agitated. You just sort of get completely consumed with wanting to hear from them again or get back the person you had a week ago when they were very attentive. And so you'll take anything to get rid of the anxiety because it's so pleasant, unpleasant, I should say. So any boundaries you might have around, okay, this isn't feeling good, what was pertinent is actually just getting rid of that feeling of the feeling so anxious, just wanting to get them back close to you again. So it's really hard to have boundaries. Anxiety trumps everything.
Yeah.
Anxiety is such a horrible feeling.
Hard to have boundaries. And also because, you know, sometimes I think there's some extra stuff with the self-sacrifice schema. Yes, it is because you don't want to be abandoned, but it's also because you've been potentially groomed and trained to just put others first. So even without threat of abandonment, there's a bias to be looking after the other.
Putting your needs aside, just being familiar with doing that, even if it feels bad.
Being familiar with doing that and wanting and also identifying with, I don't want that person to suffer, so what can I do to help them out in life generally? What else pops up for you? Anything else with the schemas in terms of vulnerability to these sort of dynamics?
I think that's mainly, I think of them as sort of a four cluster. You've got the abandonment, the emotional deprivation. I mean, these tend to clump together anyway. And then you're very other directed, you know, subjugation, self-sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
So they clump together. And then actually now I'm thinking maybe also a sense of defectiveness. So wanting something to really work out so that you're the one who has the fairy tale too. There isn't something wrong with you. You know, because sometimes if you're familiar, you know, you've got those schemas and you're familiar with choosing people who aren't there, you've kind of got a trail of failed attempts to find someone. It looks so easy to everyone else. You start thinking, what's wrong with me? Why can't I find the person? Maybe it's something with me. And so then if you're then hooked into someone who's been love bombing you and making you feel really worthy, you don't want to then sit in that shame again and have another fail.
Yeah.
Back to square one.
That's right, the defectiveness. Yeah, what's wrong with me? Because it's just that there is more, because of these schemas that put you in a position where you've had more relationships perhaps with narcissists or people that haven't been emotionally available for you, been off and on or not treated you well. When you look back at the evidence, there is that evidence that the relationships fail. So then they use that as evidence to confirm their defectiveness schema. I'll see my relationships don't work out, whereas really it's just a function of the choices which have been influenced by the schemas. And also the dependence and competence schema, you know, in terms of believing that you're not enough or you can't make it on your own or that you're not as good in that sense, that you need someone stronger, wiser to lean on to make the important decisions in your life. And of course, if we have this strong schema, we're very at the mercy of being targeted and manipulated by people who are very narcissistic. And narcissism as a personality trait runs across everybody who is in the position to do any, mainly all are love bombers, but certainly all people involved in scams, all con artists, catfishers. I mean, they would have that as a core aspect of their personality, wouldn't they?
Totally.
Yeah.
You'd have to. You'd have to be completely focused on meeting your own needs and focusing how it works for you and makes you feel good with a complete lack of empathy or care for what you're putting the other person through.
And so we there's a couple of programs out there at the moment that are really interesting. One on a strange story called Fake. Journalist Stephanie Wood has written a book about her experience. So here she's met somebody who basically, you know, love scammed her and then sort of disappeared. So had a relationship with someone who wasn't who they said they were. So this is a really interesting story on Australian Story you might want to check out. There's other women who have sort of met and had romantic relationships with men who turned out to be seriously someone other than who they claim to be.
Mm.
So they've met them, they've had relationships with them, and these men have strung them along for months or sometimes several years, claiming to be somebody else, either for financial gain, but sometimes it's not for financial gain, sometimes it's just for because they want to get their own selfish needs met, and that they're also highly manipulative and very deceitful and conning manipulators. And there was one really heartbreaking story on that report of a 19-year-old. She was 19 at the time and got involved with a guy who was in his
mid-30s, age gap or something, or older.
Yeah, he ended up having a family, wife and kids, but it was seriously cruel. I mean, the red flags in those situations, the biggest red flag is this inconsistency and absences. So you're with the person, they love bomb you, they know, they spot your vulnerabilities, they tell you what you want to hear, they get you hooked, then they start becoming unreliable. Oh, I can't meet then, let's meet then. Or there's periods of absences. I'm away every third week of the month, or I'm not contactable, I'm only contactable every other week, or I have a fly-in, fly-out job, or some other reason why they can't be around. So there's always this. And then they construct and confabulate really intricate lies about their family or about their sick mother or their sick kids and, you know, why they can't be available. So this really real big inconsistency at the front and this sort of like failing to be reliable and periods of regular absences are a really big red flag.
It was so sad. Because how long did he string her along for? Was it 2 years?
I thought it was a couple of years.
Yes. Yeah. And I forget how it came undone, but they were trying to have a child together.
She wanted to have children and he'd said yes, and it was pretty horrific, and strung her along. And the thing is that with these women who are played like this and conned, very intentionally conned, it's very destructive to their mental health. You know, some of these women have ended up being suicidal, wanting to hurt themselves, just awful things, and, you know, questioning themselves and self-doubt. It's entirely destructive. So I suppose that if there is a lesson to learn from those stories that were shared on Australian Story and then in her book Fake, I suppose is this being having your radar tuned onto, is this person available for me, you know? Because if they're constantly giving you reasons why they're not, there's a problem there. Like we said, anybody can be at the mercy of these scammers up front, but perhaps staying with them long term means that you're putting their needs in front of yours and that you're not tuning in to your gut feelings around, actually, this doesn't feel right. Yeah, so, and listening to those around you.
Okay. Did any of those women mention the gut feelings being overridden? Do they ever?
Yeah, I think there was another one who had just sort of, her story was she'd just turned 40, et cetera, and there was a guy there. I think she had doubts, but she gave him the benefit of the doubt over and over again. And these women are all very, you know, intelligent. Women's got nothing to do with all of that, and it being like stupid, like they get called sometimes by people. This is the con artists do an exceptionally good job, and they find out early your weak spot, and they hone in.
It's work a similar, out how they can push you.
Yeah, okay. Similar thing with the catfishing, which is a little bit different. Tell us about the catfishing, Justine.
So the catfishing, actually hear it mainly in the context of online dating these days. And it's basically someone who puts forward a fake persona, they present it to you, and it's obviously not them, and they spin out these series of lies through, you know, conversations and photos and videos or whatever, that they're this person when they're not. And they've got no intention of meeting you or anything like that. They're just getting their jollies and titillation from the flirtation or feeling powerful or, you know, God knows, but they're just fake, which actually did happen to me in my internet dating journey. Many years ago. Don't mean to tell you a bit about it. So this guy.
Just tell us a bit.
Yeah. Actually, this experience really fit into the Red Flag Project when I reflect. Mm-hmm. So I did lots of things that I would now tell people not to do. So met this guy online, you know, nice profile, nice photo. And very quickly, though, the conversations got very intense and frequent, right? Mm-hmm. So he was probably, we're speaking most days, and this probably happened over a 2 or 3 week period. So it happened very quickly. There was I, you know, obviously this is one of my first forays into online dating, abandonment schema realized, really, untreated at the time. And so I was kind of very hooked into him, even though I'd never met him. Because of all the intense conversations, he was curious, he was nice. I suppose at the time I had two little children. And so, you know, you kind of can sometimes come into dating thinking, oh, okay, who's going to want me? Because I come with all this baggage. He was very accepting of that. So that was, mm-hmm. I think when I look back, a big hook. So he obviously had picked that. We arranged to meet and he didn't show up. And then obviously triggered me at the time. I was very anxious. And I think he... I mean, this was over 10 years ago now. He didn't show up, and then I didn't hear from him for a day or two. So he kind of disappeared, and then so I was highly anxious and thought, "Oh my goodness, what's happened?" Because I was quite attached to this person at that point. And then he got in touch with some excuse, and then wanted to meet again. Up to that plan, lots of intense contact again, and then he didn't show again. Mm. And so he obviously had no intention of meeting me now. No. This story actually had a happy ending because the night I was meant to meet at a local pub, the night that he stood me up, I was actually had a very nice coincidence or, you know, basically ended up meeting my partner now that night. Mm. So in a way, led me to Nigel.
Yes.
That's a very nice story. I'm able to tell it another time in more detail. But he didn't have a huge impact on me really because, you know, something really good happened from it. But after that night, obviously think, what the hell happened? And he had disappeared. His profile had gone, right?
Right. So
at that point, I wasn't really aware of catfishing. I thought, oh, maybe he just wanted, like, I was still giving him the benefit of the doubt. I was thinking, oh, maybe he's anxious. Maybe he's avoidant. Oh, wow, he's not up for a relationship. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, kind of thing. But then, because you know how I didn't turn off my profile at that point. You know how you still keep getting matches. Then his photo turned up under a different profile, the same photo.
That's the giveaway with the catfishing. They've probably pulled whoever it is, whether this is a man, a female, or whoever.
Who knows, has pulled
it off social media rather than a stock photo image because they're more giveaways. But they often just troll and pick up any images of people that, you know, rather like, so it's often a real person that they're using the images for, maybe even from their group of known associates out there.
Who knows? At that point, I then reported him. I think it was to RSVP at the time because this was a while ago. But I don't know what happened. Although actually now he then sent me a dick pic actually.
Right.
Randomly.
Okay.
How is that?
A dick pic.
So from the new profile. Yeah. It's almost like he
strange.
Acknowledging that he was fake, but in a really revolting way.
Mm. Yes.
How revolting.
Get more revolting than that.
But obviously. Didn't need online dating anymore after that but so easy. Like I was completely bound up with this person. Mm. And, you know, he was really nice, you know, like he was, but I was vulnerable to it because, you know, I'd been lonely and was obviously wanting to connect with someone and gave him the benefit of the doubt.
So because the thing with the catfishing is that you never meet the person in the flesh and they string you out for a long, long time with various excuses as to why they can't meet you. So there's a fascinating, if you want to check it out, you can have a look at a recent Insight program. Insight is a show on the SBS here in Australia on catfishing. The other night I watched it and it's, you know, again, like quite fascinating from a psychological point of view, but pretty devastating from a personal one. Because there's now been at least two cases in the recent history where two young women have taken their lives because they've been the victim of catfishing. Yeah, if you want to check that out further, you can have a look at that Insight program. But this is the thing again with these people. And, of course, you could think that you've met or that this photo or someone either sends you a message on Facebook or some other social media platform. That's how it's often happening now or it will happen on dating apps. The catfish can be of any age and of any sex, right? And that women are catfishing other women pretending to be men. And men are catfishing women pretending to be other men or whoever else, and every other permutation. It's really quite odd, and but also very alarming. They had there's some researchers who are actually researching the phenomenon of catfishing. And they give these results that are pretty lackluster, I must say. And they didn't really go into a lot of depth, because they talk about the personality profile of the person who does the catfishing. They're often lonely. They feel perhaps they've got a bit of social anxiety, or they're socially isolated, or they're down there. But didn't mention the fact that if you are doing this, you are fully cognizant of the fact that you are manipulating with another human being and toying with them. So you have to have other traits. You have to be somewhat callous or completely detached, or perhaps certainly not narcissistic, or even a little bit sociopathic, psychopathic, because it has devastating consequences. It's not just a bit of a joke. This is a serious phenomenon, and it's really, really, really serious. And of course, the people, like you said, the people who are vulnerable to hanging in there are the ones, for whatever reason. You can imagine also not only vulnerable emotionally, like your example you were giving there, Justine, but I suppose it would suit someone who is also really socially anxious to be the victim of a catfisher, because you think, oh, well, this person can't meet me for whatever these reasons. It's okay. I don't mind that so much, because I'm actually really anxious about going and meeting them in the flesh anyway. So I'll just have this kind of lower level protect. Yeah. But of course you get more and more attached, and these people can have more. And what they do is they learn about you and then they mirror you. Oh, you like dogs? You like border collies? I love border collies. Oh, you want that? Oh, I want that too. And so they're constructing. And it's completely delusional. It's a complete fabrication. Yet these women men as well are falling for these people and really developing a really strong emotional bond. And then when they find out that this person isn't real, there's been devastating mental health consequences.
Yeah, we can imagine, because you can get super attached.
Super attached. So the big takeaway from that is. The big takeaway is basically it's not a relationship and it's not a bond and it's not a detachment if you're not meeting the person. If you're talking to a picture or texting, and even there's these programs now where they can have fake conversations with someone. So you think you're talking with that person, but you're not. I don't know the technology quite, but they described it on the program.
Oh my goodness.
So it's not just texting and so forth. So check that out. Check that program out. It was really interesting, but it's really kind of contrived, and it's a really big deal.
Which is why we say in our Red Flag Project, our course, our online dating course for women, is to not sort of get too intensely engaged with them prior to meeting them,
and to meet people early. And if they don't want to meet, okay, one chance is one thing. But if they continue to do it, then it's a pattern, then it's a major red flag. So don't get attached before you meet a person in the flesh, and keep yourself safe, but do meet people, and meet people in the daytime for a coffee or for a walk, not at night in a bar where there's alcohol. Just be safe, but meet early. And anybody who... who says, look, I'm not meeting you unless you do this or that, they're con artists, they're catfishers. Screen them out, say no, and focus on you and trust your gut and protect yourself, because you're important. So it's probably going to come up time and time again in a few future podcasts, but there's a lot on it now, this concept of catfishing. It's a pretty big deal. Unfortunately, the world is conducive to that nowadays. So, if you want to get in touch with us, or maybe you've got something to say on this topic in terms of your own personal experience, or a topic you want to raise with us, just contact us at justineandgemma@goodmood.com.au.
We'd love to hear from you.
Yep, we'd love to hear from you. Okay, so we'll wrap it up there. Thanks for listening. Thanks so much for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love for you to share it with others. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to get notifications when new shows are released. You can visit us at goodmood.com.au/podcast for more information. This podcast is intended for learning and entertainment purposes, and we really hope it achieves that. But because it's not a substitute for personal therapy, we'd like you to consult a qualified mental health professional for tailored support. Bye for now.